On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show. Stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show, where we have stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. I'm talking to you today from sunny Seattle here on KKNW AM 1150. You might be listening in Connecticut, New York, or Rhode Island on WBLQ AM 1230, or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio. But I tell you, wherever you're joining us from today, you are going to hear an inspiring conversation, and we're going to be going in a direction that we've never gone before on the Christine Upchurch Show, so I'm so excited. But before I tell you any more about that, I want to say hello to my better half here in the studio, Mr. Benny Mathers. Thank you for doing what you do, Benny.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Christine. Thanks for coming back into the studio every week, I should say.
And I want to also thank Peggy Snow, who's the associate producer behind the scenes.
High five, Peggy.
And, of course, Linda Firing as well.
Woo! Another high five.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got a lot of behind-the-scenes people doing all sorts of magic. But I do truly appreciate you facilitating this so people can actually hear these conversations.
It's something you love. You stick with it, right?
Yeah, yeah, we do. And I have to tell you, I'm really excited about my guest today. You know, as a former research statistician turned energy healer and then self-empowerment teacher and radio talk show host, I have a special place in my heart for people who are intellectual, who have gone sort of more mainstream route and then sort of shift their lives and shift their perspective towards consciousness. And my guest today is one who is that intellectual, who has the skills in the 3D world, but he's bringing his creativity, consciousness, and vision to our world. And I'm really excited. And the person I'm talking about today is Stephen Dynan. He is the author of a new book called Sacred America, Sacred World, Fulfilling Our Mission in Service to All. I tell you, he is a noted social entrepreneur. He's a visionary political strategist, and we don't typically go towards politics on the show, but he's got a perspective that is very inspirational. He's the founder and CEO of the Shift Network, and that is a global provider of online transformational courses and trainings, and I know many people who have been a part of that. And he used to be a senior staffer at IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which I've got lots and lots of respect for, as well as the Esalen Institute. And I'm really excited because, you know, he's written another book before, Radical Spirit, Spiritual Writings from the Voices of Tomorrow. And now he is focusing on America's role in shifting the world. He's a graduate of Stanford University. He holds a master's degree in East-West Psychology from the California Institute of Integral Studies. And he's also a member of the prestigious Transformational Leadership Council and Evolutionary Leaders Group. And he is talking to us today. I believe he's down in San Francisco. I'm so grateful he's joining us here today. Stephen Dynan, welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show.
Thank you for the very kind introduction, Christine.
Oh, you're so welcome. And you know, Stephen, I really do admire your work. And I do really appreciate the fact that you could be working directly in politics. You could be doing things that are very focused on the 3D world, and you'd be doing a fabulous job, but you have chosen to step back and say, wait a minute, let's look at the bigger picture. How can I serve even greater? Why have you chosen this path?
Well, I think in many ways our paths choose us. We don't always choose our path. It's sort of, you know, as an undergrad, I was very interested in the frontiers of science and neurobiology and what's, you know, how do we shape meaning and psychology? But ultimately kind of ran into dead ends, I would say, in terms of finding that in the synapses and neurobiology and realizing that there's a lot of deeper dimensions of psychology and consciousness that really shape who we are. And so I went on more of an Eastern path and did a lot of Buddhist practice, went to India and, you know, did the yoga scene and, you know, a lot of transpersonal psychology, and ultimately kind of came back around to recognizing that, that we really need to blend these perspectives and practices of enlightenment with how do we evolve our society in a deeper way as well. We can't just go off into our own little cocoon or ashram and experience a more enlightened way of being. We actually have to enlighten our political system in order to have the deeper changes really take root and to create the world that we all know is possible.
Yeah.
So I sort of did a more of an inward arc through my 20s and early 30s, and then have really now manifested a fairly substantial global company and that serves up transformational offerings. But also now with this more recent book is to say, how do we then apply this deeper perspective on evolving our consciousness and our society to shifting our political climate, which has become so dysfunctional and damaged in many ways, and that it's really time for an upgrade to the whole American political culture.
Yes, and I really love this concept of taking an integrative approach to not only, you know, we're used to, if we're on our evolutionary journey as individuals, we're used to sort of trying to integrate these things. But you're taking this to the level of the country, which, of course, the United States can affect the world. So I really do appreciate that. Now, the state of the world right now, I have to tell you, I've got several former colleagues, I've got friends, and also lots of Facebook friends. And on social media, they're saying from Australia and Europe, what the heck is going on in the United States? It's like theater of the absurd. From your perspective, what's going on here? And are we in crisis or are we at a potential, you know, positive change point?
Well, crisis and potential positive change point almost always go together. Uh-huh. And in many times, I make the case in the book, Sacred America, Sacred World, that we go through periodic upgrades to what I call the operating system of our country. And some of that is the outer structures and forms. And there's a legal aspect to evolving to the next level, whether it's giving women the right to vote or dissolving slavery. But we go through these periodic upgrades, but usually there's a crisis that precedes that. And so there's a crisis of really ultimately of consciousness and values and how we are going to do business in the world. And, mm-hmm. And then that ultimately translates into shifts in the political system. So that basically concretizes it for the long haul. So I make the case that we're going through an upgrade from a more nationalistic operating system to a truly global operating system, what I uh-huh. call America 7.0.
Right.
And the real roots of that are grounded in what I call a sacred worldview. And you can think of this in terms of, you know, a lot of indigenous cultures see the entire world as sacred, that all of nature is sacred, animals, mm-hmm. plants, other humans. And then if we relate to all of the world as sort of a sacred gift that we've been given and entrusted with, we actually have a deeper kind of relationship, a relationship of more reverence and respect for really all everyone who's here.
Mm-hmm.
And it also shifts how we engage politics, because right now politics has been sort of a blood sport where we're essentially attacking and demeaning the others and trying to win and then creating a lot of shadow corruption. And so we're moving into an era of more transparency. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think that what this election cycle is going to do is catalyze a number of really profound shifts. First of all, this election cycle is in many ways become a kind of a marker point for the shift from a more patriarchal era to one in which there's more masculine-feminine balance. We have mm-hmm. our first female political candidate,
right.
And we have, in some ways, Donald Trump is a kind of an exaggerated version of the strong male archetype.
Uh-huh.
He's like, you know, he's the one who can fix it. He's very dominant. He needs to be in control and direct things. He can be very aggressive. And the important thing in looking at that is not simply to judge it or condemn it, but it's more to recognize that he's an exaggeration of a pattern that has driven the American culture and psyche for many hundreds of years. And now
right.
he's creating an exaggerated form of that so that we can outgrow it, so that we can say, no, that's not who we are anymore. We don't want to be the kind of exaggerated alpha male who's going to go into combat when any perceived slight. We actually want to have a different kind of way of engaging each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that he's going to catalyze a very important upgrade of the Republican Party, which I think is really important. Is one of the theses in the book is that all political parties are ultimately are essential,
uh-huh.
and that we need to honor different value systems. So it's not just that the progressives are right and conservatives are wrong. It's more that each has carried certain important codes for the American culture and consciousness that need to be honored. And when we can go beyond just being partisan and doing warfare with other parties to really seeing and integrating what seem to be opposite positions, uh-huh. then we actually become more whole, we become more integrated, and ultimately stronger leaders. So I call that political cross training.
Yeah, and I love that concept.
Natural perspective and engage others and integrate what they're offering too.
Right, and so I really appreciated how you were pointing out some of the gems of wisdom within the two main political parties. So from your perspective, you know, what are they in like the Republicans versus the Democrats? What are the pearls of wisdom sort of driving them?
Well, I think that on the right, George Lakoff has done some great analysis showing how the Republican Party is more sourced from the strict father archetype, uh-huh. and that the Democratic Party is more sourced from the nurturing mother archetype in many ways. Uh-huh. And so on the right, you tend to have things that are more about strength and self-reliance and self-responsibility and fiscal discipline and more about building power in a way for the self. And on the left, you tend to have more about inclusivity and taking care of the poor and the marginalized and the people who haven't been part of the power structures in different ways. And so that's more the inclusive spirit of the mother, and there's more generosity often in that uh-huh. spirit of, it's like, we need to include all these people. But the truth is, you know, for America to go to the next level, we actually need the most integrated and enlightened form of both. We need to have the self-responsibility and the discipline and the strength, really, that is cultivated, but in some ways more so on the right. And on the left, we also need to have that open-armed embrace of the full spectrum of humanity, and to really have equality as a bedrock principle that we want to integrate and respect all different races and religions and socioeconomic levels. So we can't just be focused on our own success. And so the shadow side of the right will express in the kind of the triumphant winners of the economic match, right? And so it'll just
sure.
be
oh, yeah.
looking at, like, looking out for yourselves, but not looking out for the good of the whole.
Mm-hmm.
On the left, we can get into looking out for the good of the whole, but undermine the importance of building strong businesses and strong economic engine and strong
right.
Defense, even. And that becomes part. So there's a, you can see it in the critiques of both sides. But instead of just kind of saying, I'm just going to be on one side of this, it's like looking at it from a wide-angle lens. It's like, these are all important aspects of the full expression of our humanness
yes.
and ultimately our society. So when we can integrate both the compassion and the strength, when we can integrate the need to really extend care and support to those who are the most marginalized in our society, and the need to build strong enterprises that really succeed, and that entrepreneurial engine that's the source of so much of American ingenuity, that we want to have a both and in relationship to the parties.
Uh-huh.
And so what happens is you start to, when the parties get more and more exaggerated, then they say, they start getting a monopoly on, these values are our values, and,
right.
and we're going to go to war with you over these. Our values are more important than your values. And the truth is, they're both important. They're sort of like two wings of the American eagle that are needed to fly. And so we want to get beyond this civil war between left and right mm-hmm. to really recognize that the integration and the exchange between those idea systems and value systems is actually really important for the health of the country. But
I
can't do it when we're just at war with each other.
Yeah, I love this. Conscious politics, boy. I'd love to see us go to that next level. But right now we have to go to break. More with Stephen Dynan when we return here on the Christine Upchurch Show.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
If you're one of the millions of Americans suffering from anxiety, you probably know how powerless and out of control this emotion can make you feel. This is why it is so important to remember that anxiety is created by your mind, which means that you can learn to use your mind to uncreate it. Hello, my name is Dr. Friedman Schaub. My award-winning book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, provides you with a step-by-step breakthrough process to understand and resolve the root causes of your anxiety and build a solid foundation of confidence and inner peace. If you're ready to take your power back, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com. That's thefearandanxietysolution.com or call 866-903-6463. That's 866-903-MIND.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. What does the word healing mean? Many think that healing merely means eliminating symptoms. However, based on my many years as a healer, I have a much broader perspective on the word. Healing can manifest in a variety of ways, including having physical problems resolved, becoming more emotionally centered, experiencing better relationships, gaining greater clarity, and feeling more spiritually connected. True healing always includes some level of transformation. Whatever form healing takes, there is one commonality, an improvement in quality of life. To me, the highest form of healing goes beyond aligning with wellness. It comes from recognizing our soul's voice and allowing it to speak through us. And in that sense, don't we all yearn to heal into our wholeness? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW, WBLQ, and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm having a conversation today with Stephen Dynan. He is the founder and CEO of the Shift Network, and he's the author of a couple of books, including his latest beautiful book called Sacred America, Sacred World, Fulfilling Our Mission in Service to All. Now, Stephen, you know, I don't normally come out on air about politics, my own personal, you know, political perspective and all that, but I just wanted to share a story. I was actually a Bernie delegate at the local level, and I went to this huge gathering, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and I have to tell you that I became very dismayed over something. It was kind of like, you know, there were all these people, and it was great because there were a lot of young people involved, and I was not feeling judgmental about, you know, which candidate a person was for. But within the context of this caucus, there was a whole lot of us versus them. It's kind of like, you know, the point here isn't to just be focusing on your candidate, but it's to really beat whoever the Republican nominee is. And there was a whole lot of the local stuff as well. And locally, there's actually one Republican I support because I really respect him. And so even though I tend to be, you know, I'm sort of independent, but tend to be more Democratic, it's like I'm not going to just say I'm a cog in this Democratic wheel. So how do we shift this us versus them?
Well, I think it begins, it happens on a lot of different levels. On the personal level, I think we can take it on as a practice. It's what I call political cross-training. And it's important for us to disidentify with just being in one camp or another, and to actually really see and respect another. So I'll give an example from my life. In 2008, Sarah Palin was the vice presidential candidate. All my progressive friends were sort of trashing her in different ways, and I personally couldn't stand her either. And like she was like really nails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm. But I got more circumspect about that, and I said, well, you know what, I'm basically rejecting somebody who is, you know, part of our human family and deserves dignity and respect, and can I find the place of really loving and honoring her in my heart? And at the time, I couldn't, so I took a little pilgrimage. I read both of her books over time, and really. and really read them cover to cover and gave her a chance to sort of speak her mind and to understand more how she grew up. And to I could see the noble parts in her upbringing and similar to some ways to my northern Minnesota upbringing.
Uh-huh.
And there was that kind of self-reliance and hunt for food. And there's a sense of kind of that rugged individualism that's more in the cold climates and dangerous, sort of woodsy environments.
Right.
I saw how she really took on some of the established corrupt power structures in Alaska. And she had a child that was Down syndrome, even though it was going to cost her something to do that. And
mm-hmm.
So there's a way in which just by taking the time to really understand her life history, I came to a deeper sense of appreciation of who she was.
Right.
Didn't make me more conservative, but it made me actually soften my heart to her. And at the end of that journey, I had a dream where she showed up in the dream, and we were actually very friendly, and we hugged in the dream. It was very sweet.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And I ended up, later I wrote an article about this called Dissolving the Palin Prejudice that I published at Huffington Post.
Uh-huh.
My progressive friends were horrified, but I got a lot of fan mail from conservatives. And I think this is really important for me because it made me understand how when we do battle with another political leader that we don't like, it's not just about that person. It's like that person is a symbol for a lot of other people of something they want to see in the world.
Right.
So when we trash and denigrate and go to war with people that we don't agree with politically, then it has an impact on all those who are supporting them as a leader. So these conservatives had felt really denigrated and marginalized and hated by progressives, partially because a woman they respected and they were excited about, the first Republican female candidate for vice president, was being trashed. And so there was some damage and some trauma that was happening as a result of the way that we were engaging this process.
Mm-hmm.
And me engaging it in a different way actually helped to create some space for healing.
Right.
And I think that was an important moment for me because it later seeded this whole notion of like needing to cross the divides and to be able to engage political differences the way we do other kinds of diversity, whether it's religious diversity or cultural diversity or ideological diversity. It's like political diversities actually can enrich us if we approach it in a deeper way. And
right.
So rather than this battlefield kind of mentality where we're just trying to destroy the opposition, we're actually learning from and growing from our engagement with people who are different. And so it's applied very much in the formation and running of the Shift Network. I was kind of more hard left in many ways in my 20s and early 30s and didn't get the first version of the Shift Network off the ground. And
uh-huh.
I joke that I had to integrate my inner Republican in order to get the Shift Network off the ground. And I had my wife's father, who was very, he's no longer alive, but who's very, very staunch conservative, very successful business person,
uh-huh.
Asked him to mentor me. And at first he didn't, he wasn't willing to because I was too much of a wimp in his mind. But then I took it on. I took on his challenges. I took on mixed martial arts, which he wanted to see me toughen up. And,
uh-huh.
you know, and I think there was a way in which I symbolically, literally integrated more of his value system and his perspective, and it made me a stronger business person. It made me a better entrepreneur. And I think that the truth is that all of the different, we need the full spectrum of qualities to go to the next level. And so when we do battle with another political party, we're also rejecting a part of ourselves.
Yes.
We're rejecting a part of, you know, whether that's, so if we're left oriented, which a lot of people in transformation industry are.
Sure.
We tend to be rejecting a lot of elements of strength and power and money and abundance
right.
and some of the masculine qualities as well. And so we need actually a healthy masculine. We need healthy entrepreneurship. We need more self-responsibility. And those are actually central to developing a strong identity and a our own leadership. And so we have to be very careful that we're not separating from parts of ourself by doing battle politically. And that we're not creating wounds and trauma in our collective that then make it very difficult to get things done down the road.
Yeah.
You know, we can kvetch about the fact that the Congress is so stalemated, but we don't actually take responsibility for the ways that we've helped to perpetuate that by creating a warfare political culture. And
right,
we each have the capacity to help to start to undo it. So this year, for instance, I traveled to both the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention, and I wasn't going to protest. I was going to cross-train and make allies.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was on a panel at the Purple Tent with Grover Norquist, who in many ways is ideologically about as far from me as you can get.
Uh-huh.
But I was interested in seeing is there some common ground? Can we find places to actually meet and dialogue and potentially move some things forward?
That's really exciting because, you know, when you talk about sort of demonizing, and you talk about this in your book too, demonizing others, we are actually demonizing a part of ourselves, and it creates this inner conflict, I think, on a very deep level when we are busy rejecting others.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah. And
go ahead.
And it basically paralyzes us from being able to go to the next level as a country. So mm-hmm. America has this amazing, I think, spiritual mission to unify the world. I mean, E Pluribus Unum is not just about unifying 13 states into a nation. It's really about creating oneness out of the manyness of the world.
Right.
So we're integrating more streams of culture and religion and consciousness than any other country, probably. So when we're at our best, we're a great unifying force, and I think we're now in the midst of doing that on the global stage to really help the whole human family come back together.
So,
but in order for us to do that, we have to demonstrate it here and demonstrate it how we do politics as well.
Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, where were our founding fathers coming from, and have we gotten away from their vision?
Well, I think that there are ways that we have, I think we have to have this balance point where we both deeply honor and respect our roots, and mm-hmm. that's something that those on the left can sometimes not do adequately.
Uh-huh.
And so I think there's an understanding of our history as a kind of a sacred inheritance, that the principles that we were founded on and the founding documents and the streams of ideas that fed into that, both Enlightenment stream from Europe as well as the Native American stream through the Iroquois Confederation, which was a template for American democracy.
Uh-huh.
There was a really profound way in which the founding of our country shaped the whole future of life on planet Earth, and to honor that as a sacred inheritance. But part of honoring that is also not romanticizing it, not neglecting the shadow side. I mean,
right.
the compromise around slavery, and it was basically, it's a white owning class model for governance, and we have had to make democracy more democratic, and that's been part of our evolution over time, to integrate more and more people into how we make decisions and how we guide ourselves and mm-hmm. how we self-govern, really. So there are things to be celebrated in our past, and there are things that we clearly need to outgrow. And so
right.
that we're always in this process. That at their best, the founding fathers laid down some guiding principles that they knew were going to have to evolve new expressions over time. And so that's why Thomas Jefferson said, he thought we might need a new constitution every 30 years because each generation would have to reinvent itself.
Right.
I think that a whole new constitution.
We don't hear that very often, though, do we?
No. But it's part of the design, as they recognized there was going to be emergent challenges. There were going to be, you can't anticipate what the world looks like 240 years from now. There's no way they could have anticipated, Twitter.
Right, exactly.
And the effect that Twitter was going to have on democracy and lobbyists. And, so we have all these new emergent challenges that we have to face and integrate. And we've got a global culture and a global challenges in a way that, they didn't really have a global culture or global challenges. They had very local challenges when the states were created.
Right. We have to go to another quick break, but stay tuned. More with Steve and Dynan in a few moments.
Called the Oprah of Radio by her listeners, award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off of traditional talk radio. Get ready for an energizing delivery and powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's fresh, new perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Visit thedrpatshow.com. That's thedrpatshow.com for listening times in your area.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's LynnBrownEvent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, that song, Benny.
Yeah.
I love that song. But I think we're at a stage now where we want to get the satisfaction.
I hope. Really hope so.
Shift things around. And our guest today is doing exactly that. He's working towards this vision of Sacred America, Sacred World, which is the title of his new book. And I have to tell you, this is what Bruce Lipton has had to say about his new book. Sacred America, Sacred World provides a valuable voyager's guide to traversing the uncharted waters of planetary transformation. It points us in the direction of functional, transpartisan politics, sustainable economics, and our individual responsibility as participants in nurturing civilization's evolution. The insights offered in this powerful book have the potential to change the world. Just love that. I love Bruce Lipton, and I'm loving this book. And Steve, you know, this concept of changing America and changing the world, why is it that we are playing this role? From your perspective, why is it that you think we have this potential to really shift the world?
Well, I think in many ways, you know, evolution often happens on the edge of things. So once you've got an established structure, it can be a little more resistant to change. And so in a major multinational company, that's why they'll create like a skunk works. There were create the people who are going to create the next generation of the company a little bit off from what everybody else is doing.
Uh-huh.
So we forget that, you know, America wasn't the center of the world when we were created. It was off on the periphery. The center of action for most of the power was all in Europe, and
right.
We're just provincial little bumpkins, a couple of million people.
yep.
And so there was a real recognition that we could create something that was going to innovate, that was going to be at the margins, that would innovate and ultimately feed back and change the whole system. And so American culture has really been built around a kind of pioneering culture. It's like we're always looking for the creative new expression. We're rebels and innovators and misfits, and that culture continues to thrive. I would say particularly on the West Coast now, with both the media industry and the high tech industry being very much about breaking new ground and innovating and pushing the envelope of new possibilities. And so America really, because of that, because of our, you know, creation on the periphery, if you will, we became a carrier for a new template for humanity. about how to do democracy, how to do self-governance in a way that actually freed more of our potential. And so we've been able to do this to a certain point, and now we're the big dog. We're the ossified structure. We've got corruption in a very deep way in Washington D.C. in particular. Uh-huh. Our political system has become very corrupted. But the problem, what we can't do is just judge it and hate it or even separate from it. We have to take responsibility for shifting it to the next level, because really the world is counting on us at this point. We wield so much power. We have something like, I think it's 22% of the world's economy and 40% of the world's military, mm-hmm. and much of the cultural and innovation and financial capital. It's like the world can't go to the next level, uh-huh. of health and prosperity and peace until we do. And so right. if we're corrupted, this great engine of power and ingenuity, it has a huge impact. It's like a drag on the rest of the planet.
Right.
So it's really imperative that all of us, especially those who are on a path of personal growth and transformation, take responsibility for helping to shift it. And that means shifting the political culture. It means also shifting, very practical reforms from getting the money out of politics and ending Citizens United to looking at how do we stop the gerrymandering and redistricting. And I look in the book also at very practical things. There's the inner side, which is the psychology in a way of transforming to the next level as a culture.
Right.
There's a lot about vision, activating a vision of our next level of potential, which is important to galvanize people around,
right.
and also looking at the practical shifts that we need to make, and we can create bridges around, from prison reform to economic reform to how do we redo banking.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those practical things are very important as well.
And, Stephen, one of the things I really appreciate about your perspective and what you talk about in this book is, from a personal perspective, I think many of us who are on our conscious journey understand the importance of having not only awareness of our shadow side, but also learning to embrace and integrate it in a healthy way. Why is it important that we look at the shadow side of America, and how do we help to integrate that in a way that will heal the world?
Well, it's important for the same reason as with individuals, is that if you have something you're denying, you don't have access to the gifts of it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's lessons, and if you deny something, it will tend to kind of undermine or poison what you're up to. So America right now does have a big shadow side of things we haven't addressed in a deep and lasting and thorough way,
mm-hmm.
and that does drag us down. And so just to use a couple examples, we were founded on a Native American genocide that was as large as the genocide of the Jews by Hitler. And it's like not something that we really put much attention on as a country. There were 18 million approximately Native Americans on American soil when Columbus landed, and there were about a million a year, 100 years later. So that's a massive genocide.
It is.
And it's not just about the Native Americans, although we do need to do really important work to help to empower them, to honor their rights and sovereignty in different ways, and to help to create a healthier system that integrates them. It's also about the wisdom stream that they carried and still carry to some extent, that there was a wisdom stream about how to relate to the earth in a
yes.
way that's more filled with reverence,
right.
that's more sacred, and relate to each other in a way that many tribes had devised methods of peace building that were quite strong. The Iroquois Confederation had several hundred years of peace, and that was why it was a template for American democracy. There's also
yes.
just an understanding of the tribe and that is deeper than we have. We're very focused on the individual. So we missed out on an opportunity to integrate the wisdom streams that Native Americans represented. And we also, by denying and avoiding this whole shadow that we haven't really looked at deeply enough as a country, we also are more prone to arrogance, because what happens when you haven't done the shadow work is you tend to get inflated with your sense of self-importance.
Mm-hmm.
So American arrogance is quite dangerous for the world, because then we're not humble about the ways that we've abused power in different ways. And so it's this kind of fine line to walk between being really genuinely loving and celebratory of the sacred inheritance we've been given, and we don't want to undermine that at all.
Right.
But we also have to be really clear-eyed about seeing the ways that we've been out of integrity, where we've abused power, we've harmed people, and that until we, really do some deep soul work as a country around those, we're going to tend to be the ugly, inflated Americans in different ways that are chest thumping about being number one, mm-hmm. rather than like, okay, yes, we have a lot of power, but we've also abused that power. And there's a sacred duty to do so in a way that is more conscious and caring than we have done.
I think a lot of individuals, though, may say that, well, you know, it didn't happen in my generation. I wasn't a part of it. Therefore, why should I need to worry about it? What do you have to say to that?
Well, what I say to that is that you basically, if we don't do that work, then it's hard for our country to mature. It's not that each of us is to blame, per se, for mm-hmm. that history, but we have the opportunity to take responsibility. I think this is an important shift. And, you know, as a white man, for instance, I'm sort of been part of the, quote, most privileged class. Uh-huh. And so I could say, well, I didn't create slavery. I didn't destroy the native populations. I've generally been very supportive of women, and mm-hmm. I haven't been part of the oppression of women. But it's actually deeper than that. It's more like, well, as a white man, I have the opportunity to help to heal some of this history so that we can create a still better world. It's not just a guilt and shame thing. It's more mm-hmm. like, you know what, this is actually an opportunity to be a catalyst for healing. So we've done a lot of stuff with Native American peoples. I've done a lot of stuff with different healing around women and women's empowerment, and that's actually a beautiful opportunity to be involved in righting a historical wrong and to getting things on a better trajectory. So I think we have to take it out of the blame and shame and guilt conversation, which tends to be oppressive to people, to more of the opportunity to actually have our country and ourselves fulfill a still higher vision of who we can be and to really be a shining light for the world.
That's beautiful. We're going to go to another quick break, but more in just a few moments.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Pat. The ancient Inca root vegetable maca is world-renowned for its wide array of health benefits. As a family-run company of true maca specialists, the Maca Team's mission is to provide you with fresh, organic, premium-quality maca powders at a fair price. Amazing. All of the products are always organically grown, fair-traded, GMO-free, fresh, and potent. So don't take my word for it. Experience the life-changing benefits of maca today. Visit themacateam.com.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit StellarReflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com.
Think about it. There must be a higher law down in the heart and in stars above. Without it, love is wasted time. Look inside your heart.
Welcome back to the Christine Epchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. Yes, higher love is what we're after here. And, you know, Stephen, one of the things that has struck me is that in terms of our transformation, social media can either make us or break us. What's your perspective on how to utilize it in a way to help shift our world?
It's a great question. It's not one that I go into in Sacred America, Sacred World, but I think that we have to. There's good and bad that comes with social media, because it can empower the best in us and it can empower the worst in us.
Right.
And so we have to be aware of that and not be too rosy-eyed about it. I got very enthusiastic about Twitter, for instance. I wrote an article about the spiritual importance of Twitter when it first came out, talking about how it could essentially, by real-time connecting, like, what's your latest, quickest thoughts on things, it's sort of like a wiring of the global brain.
Is it
like the circulation of consciousness becomes that much more rapid? And so there's a way in which social media is starting to dissolve some of the boundaries between us. So we have more fluid, more permeable boundaries now, because we have more transparency about our personal lives and we have a more fluid flow of information all throughout the day.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that there is that potential. However, what it oftentimes does in the short term is it can lead us to reinforce where we are. So the way that social media reinforces is that we start only listening to people who think like us. And we're only going to have, there's more and more research around this now in terms of political positions, is that most people tend to socialize only with people who are like-minded politically now. We're actually more segregated politically than we are racially in some ways.
And that scares me, because I've seen several people on Facebook who seem to be fairly conscious in terms of some of their posts, who end up unfriending people because of their political views. And I'm thinking, why on earth would you do that?
Yeah. Well, it's natural. In some ways, it's part of the old tribal part of consciousness.
Uh-huh.
I mean, to understand it, it's like there was survival value to looking out for the tribe for much of human history. And so we wanted to bond more strongly with our tribe because we needed to protect against a perceived enemy. But that can work against us in a truly global culture, because then we start to move into our tribes, and our tribes get information from the same sources. Our tribes can get very self-reinforcing.
Yes.
So you see that you mentioned you were a Bernie delegate. I mean, you can see it in the Bernie world. And there's a whole different set of information, and all of the critiques and the hatred of Hillary and all of the Clinton body count, all these different things, some of which needs to be addressed and some of which is kind of ungrounded conspiracy theory and it can become very self-referential. And I watched this happen a lot with the campaign, and there was a certain amount of poison that got introduced that was about this kind of like self-referring tribe that wasn't taking the time to necessarily always question assumptions or to go and talk with other people.
Yeah.
You know, I've had to have like real conversations with people about, well, you know, there's a whole other side to Hillary Clinton that you need to actually understand and embrace as well. As if you're going to look at the shadow side, look at the light side as well. And that can be hard because oftentimes the impulse to denigrate others becomes part of the value system. So I was talking to
say that again, Stephen, because that's so important.
Yeah, when there's the impulse to denigrate others becomes part of the value system. So there's parts of the Bernie or bust crowd where literally a certain level of hatred of Hillary Clinton is necessary to be part of the tribe. If you don't demonstrate that you hate her, then you're not actually part of the tribe. You're not part of the us.
Right.
And so that's where you get value systems, these tribal groupings that can become harmful because we're building in the xenophobia or the suspicion of the other or particular hatreds become like the necessary code for membership. And that happens on both left and right.
Sure.
It happens in a lot of different ways. And so I think that if we're going to be really conscious, we have to be aware of that tendency and make an effort to read outside of our bubble world. And so I try to read some conservative leaning articles every day, in addition to things I might pick up from Huffington Post or CNN. So I'm more aware of what's happening in conservative circles, for instance.
And I personally look at both some of the writing about sort of the conspiracy theory I try to avoid, but some of the sort of alternative news as well as the mainstream news, because I think that there can be, you know, a kernel of truth in both sides.
Yeah, I think that's part of being a sacred citizen. I talk about that in the book. It's like sacred citizenship requires this kind of inner work we're talking about, where we let go of our own predispositions and find the place where we can actually love and honor people who are different than us politically.
Right.
But it also means reading from multiple perspectives, alternative sources, mainstream sources, being well-informed. And it also means, I think, working both inside and outside. That's a way that we can sometimes get another kind of polarization that doesn't help, where you can get outside the system and you're protesting the streets, but then you're not actually reaching out and making bridges and friendships with the people in the office of your representative, who is there to represent you. And so people get into the, you know, that I'm just outside the system and down with the system and against the establishment. But you're like, you know what? It's actually more effective if you work both on the inside and on the outside. And it's been very liberating and interesting and illuminating to do some citizen lobbying with our senators and congressional representatives. It's a group named Friends Committee on National Legislation, does great training. They've got a yearly gathering in November that has the largest peace lobby of the year. And we go every year, and it's great to really learn how to lobby effectively instead of just complaining about it or protesting in the street or doing it on social media. It's like, you know, use democracy as it was designed to actually influence the people who are there to represent you.
Right. One of the things that Carolyn Mace said in one of her books years ago is that we're all tribal in nature, of course. And in order to influence the tribe, to really shift the tribe, you have to step out of the tribe, but then you also have to come back in. And so what you're talking about right now is, yes, stepping out and then, you know, basically coming back in to shift things. Which I think is so important.
And the way we step in is that, like, we often have to find whatever, it's not just one tribe. If you want to influence multiple tribes, you have to be able to join, you have to be able to validate enough of who they are to actually have a bond, of a tribal bond. And so when I've done conservative talk radio, for instance, I'm always looking for what's the place where we can find agreement first and build some rapport,
and then
explore our differences, because that creates a little bit of that tribal resonance rather than just two warring political parties.
So, Stephen, I know that you have a vision of global democracy. What is that?
Well, I think it's people can get hung up on things like one world government and basically project a negative vision of government to a planetary scale, and then it feels like it's oppressive and it's a state. So I think that doesn't actually help anything. And so what I talk about in this book is stepping back and saying, what is the natural outgrowth of creating more and more unification on the planet, where the walls are coming down between us, where we're becoming more and more one human family? It's to actually create a more democratic way of solving global problems. Right now that we have nation states, but it's not actually we don't elect anybody to represent us for global issues in the same way that we could. And so, you know, I think that where we will naturally evolve to as a species, as we get beyond the state of nations warring with each other, is to have a more unified global democracy that has limited power. That, say, let's say 5% of the decision-making power could be by a global congress of problem solvers, basically, that are protected and insulated from lobbying influence, that are really looking at how do we deal with things like climate change and global trade agreements and, you know, the ways that financial flows are taking advantage of different countries. And there's a way we have very globalized corporations right now that are already acting and making decisions that have a big impact on countries, and they're not really constrained by the rules and regulations of any one country anymore. And so there's almost like there's a need to have a counterbalance where people have a vote and a representative to help to address these global problems. So I'm, you know, not going into the details of what it looks like. I'm simply trying to, like, lay out the case for why it's a natural evolution of from where we are, to not be afraid of it, but to also be wise about, you know, taking the baby steps towards that in a way that actually is sensible and that has adequate protections in place and that it's sufficiently democratic as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, the worst thing obviously would be to have some sort of authoritarian, global state, and that's why people are afraid of that. But right. it's actually pretty bad as well to have transnational corporations that can just play nations off each other.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
no accountability, and they're basically kind of running the planet into the ground. We need to have a balance against that too.
Right. And we have run out of time, but I definitely want to mention your two websites, sacredamerica.net and stephendinan.com. It's stephendinan.com. Stephen, I love your book. I love what you're doing. And I really appreciate you joining us here today.
Awesome. It's been a really, really fun. And you're a great interviewer. So thanks so much, Christine.
Okay, thank you. And thanks for joining us here today. Talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.